We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's come aboard.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Wednesday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good, and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters, and we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can. Hey, thanks for being with us, everybody. Tomorrow morning is the annual Halloween Spooktacular episode. All of us will be in costume, as we always are. And the Gidget of Gadget, Katie Linedahl, is going to join us in studio as well with her costume. She always comes in for this. Halloween is basically her favorite holiday. She grew up in a household where her mom was a costume designer, so she always had the best costumes as a kid growing up. I decidedly did not. I remember when I was 5 years old, I wanted desperately to be a Ghostbuster. All of my friends were being Ghostbusters. My mom said, I don't know how to make a Ghostbusters costume. You're going to be a cowboy again this Halloween. I learned the hard lesson. You want something done, you better do it yourself, DA. It was a tough lesson at an early age, but I got it. And from then on, I realized I also was not a seamstress, so I would just go to the 5 and 10 and buy my costume, which was one of those plastic little rinky-dink plastic masks and something that I sweat through within the first 5 minutes trick-or-treating. But it was always a good time. Always a good time. Katie had the opposite experience. Her mom was a costume designer and basically created Broadway-style costumes for her at like half a dozen per year. So she still is totally into it, which is awesome. She always has the best costume she'll be in. Tomorrow, we'll all have our costume. And I'm excited. I got mine. I'm ready to go. It's going to be a fun one. I got a little plot twist at the end of mine. Whereas yours is a tandem, you and the whole family, you're one of four with your costume genre. There's a whole theme going on with you and the entire fam.
Yes, we will be introduced as a team tomorrow morning. That is the plan, although I must be honest. Asking Danielle to wake up, 2 minutes before she starts work from home was not exactly an ideal scenario for me, but we're going to get everybody up, everybody joyful, and away we go.
So you are planning to have Taylor up and dressed by 6 a.m. Eastern?
Well, no. She's going to join us when Katie's on the show. The problem is my wife starts work at 8 a.m. Eastern, but unfortunately, in the job she has, that alarm goes off at 7:58 a.m. Eastern, the same time Katie's supposed to come on. So we asked her to get up a little early and get everybody dressed and ready. It was a bit of a hassle, but we're going to be okay. We're going to be introduced as a team.
Pete the Body, do you have your costume ready to go?
Oh, it's ready. It is very show-related.
Okay, so I'm going to be dressed up starting at 6 a.m. Eastern time. I'm sure Pete is as well because Pete's coming in to work to the studio. Miraz, are you saying you're going to dress up in the break between 7:55 and 8 a.m. Eastern time?
I don't have to. I could be dressed before the show, but how we have always done it is we change into our costumes before Katie comes on. We have never done the full shows in the costumes. So if you're telling me we're changing the rules on the fly, I'll sit here in my costume. It won't make much sense until my team gets here, but I'll do it.
Is that true? I had dressed up as Cam Newton during a commercial break?
Yes, because it was a big surprise for what you were going to come. You went into the bathroom. I distinctly remember putting on the year Space Jam in the control room right before Katie came in. Absolutely. We waited to put all those costumes on until right before the segment. It was a big reveal.
Huh. So should we do that again? Should we only reveal it at 8 a.m.?
Well, I mean, that was kind of part of the fun when Katie came in. You know, when Katie comes in 2 hours into a party of all of us already basically having stared at each other's costumes, and what, we're not going to acknowledge them for 2 hours?
Huh.
Now, it is a little different. We're on Zoom this year, so everything in 2020 is a little different. So I'm not necessarily anti it if you feel like it's too big a project to get dressed. I'm down for whatever he's going to go to. I'm just telling you the way it has been.
Okay. Well, I'll have to think about this. But either way, tomorrow is the Halloween Spooktacular. Katie in studio. I've got some footage of her and I talking about the Halloween Spooktacular on Instagram, which will be posted as soon as the show is over. So follow me there at Damon Amendo and check out the pregame footage, pre-roll, if you will, of Katie and I talking about tomorrow's Halloween Spooktacular. Last night, World Series Game 6. There's a lot of ways you can go on it, but the overwhelming storyline is obviously the Rays pulling their ace, their Cy Young Award winner, Blake Snell, after just 5 1/3 innings. And the biggest issue that I had last night was the ease with which he was mowing through the heart of the Dodgers order. And I did not like it all, Kevin Cash, last night. Being asked about his decision, which ultimately haunted the Rays, his reliever that came in immediately gave up 2 runs in a 1-0 game. Dodgers took the lead, never to look back. That was the turning point, obviously, of Game 6 of the World Series, which the Dodgers clinched the championship last night. My problem was that Kevin Cash tried to say he's got flexibility, that nobody ever tells him what hard and fast has to happen, that he can go by his feel of the game. But his read was, we always want to take Blake Snell out before the third time through the order. Now, the metrics have said Blake Snell, third time through the order, third time hitter see him, usually roughs him up. So this is what the Rays were seeing. And the Rays thought, we have a great bullpen. We have a 1-run lead. He's already given us 5 innings. There's no need to push the envelope here. But Kevin Cash is lying in some way, shape, or form. If he has the flexibility last night to make a decision outside of what the metrics and the analytics says, which is pull Blake Snell after his first 2 times through the order. Well, Snell had just buzzed through those first 2 times through the order to the tune of 73 pitches, and striking out the heart of the order, each guy, twice. He had been brilliant to that point in time. He had not labored. He had not struggled. Nothing was off. So if you're telling me that Kevin Cash has the flexibility there to do what he wants, that he doesn't have to adhere to the hard and fast rules, well, what's the situation that Snell would have stayed in with? He had struck out 9 and walked 1. So his command was great. He had struck out the most important bats in the order that were coming up there. If through 73 pitches, Blake Snell felt great and said that he did and didn't want to be taken out. Blake Snell feels great. It's a low number of total pitches. His command is great. You have the lead. And he's dominated the upcoming 3 batters. What is the scenario that Kevin Cash can then go off script? If that's not the scenario, what is? That he had to have a no-hitter going? That he had to have a no-hitter and less than 60 pitches thrown? What exactly is the scenario? That's where I think Kevin Cash is lying. Either he's lying that he has flexibility, which maybe he doesn't. Maybe he just has to make that decision because that's what the analytics says, and therein is just what the Rays are. Or at that point in time, they thought that Blake Snell was laboring. I mean, that was a baseball field decision. Something does not add up there with his explanation of the situation. That can't be a baseball feel. That had to be analytics. Thus, you're being inflexible. And if there's ever a moment to be inflexible, it has to be when your season's on the line in the World Series. That's my problem, is that the Rays raid themselves to a World Series, but then outraid themselves in the World Series. For the Dodgers, big win, history off of their backs. 1988 was the last time they won. They've heard this time and time again. They finally break the drought. I love how the team was built. They drafted and developed the right way. They built a core nucleus of great young hitters. They had a solid enough rotation, enough. And Walker Buehler, again, homegrown talent as the ace. Clayton Kershaw, homegrown talent as the ace. Good leadership. A manager in Dave Roberts that they were patient with. They kept going back to the well with. That paid dividends. And ultimately, the trade for Mookie Betts was the final ingredient to getting over the top. So props to that Dodgers franchise for doing it their way, doing it a smart way, swinging for the fences when they had a chance at Betts, and he paid huge dividends last night because he ends up scoring the go-ahead run by having great speed of the base paths and aggressive tendencies coming to the plate and beating that throw and then hitting the home run as well, which gives them the breathing room of the 3-1 lead. On football, Trevor Lawrence yesterday was asked about his future and if there's any scenario that he could conjure up where he comes back to play next year at Clemson. Here was Trevor Lawrence.
I don't know. I mean, we'll just have to see how things unfold. I think there's a lot of factors in that. But honestly, just really playing this year, putting everything I have into it, not really focusing on next year.
So some people thought that this was blinking light, that Trevor Lawrence was worried about going to the Jets. Mraz, as he is wont to do, got embroiled into a Twitter spat about this with one of our very own. I mean, the kid is the best kid ever, Ryan Hickey. He's my producer for Sunday Morning Football. He's a level-headed, even-keeled guy, doesn't get angry, doesn't shout out, isn't highly opinionated, and of course, Mraz dragged him into the mud and got him fired up and got into a Twitter fight with him. Do you feel good about this? Hickey has got to be the nicest, most pleasant soul in the world, and you're fighting with him on Twitter.
Hickey's one of my friends. We hang out together. He lives 10 minutes from my house.
And me so him, why are you fighting with him on Twitter?
Me and him argue about sports all the time on Twitter. That wasn't a real fight. That's just disagreeing and having a good time with each other. We disagree with each other's points.
Poor guy is just, he's just trying to live a happy-go-lucky life, and you drag him into a Twitter bout.
He's one of my best friends at the station. What do you mean, the poor guy?
Do you think he really wanted to be embroiled in that yesterday?
Yes, he did. It's the same thing. When you tweet a take, you're ready to be debated on it. I mean, that you don't tweet a hot take and then not expect some pushback.
And so your point was that you think this has nothing to do with the Jets. This is just
nothing.
What every prospect says.
He is in the middle of an undefeated season with Clemson. His focus is on trying to win a national championship before he gets out. He never gets asked a word about the Jets, never says a word about the Jets. If he dare says anything about the teams at the top of the draft, the NCAA immediately is going to go, hold on, let's look into this. This guy have an agent. What's he talking about teams for? He's saying what he's supposed to say is the quarterback of Clemson right now, and everybody completely took it and ran with it, that he seriously might go back to Clemson.
But that's two different arguments, because him not talking about the Jets has nothing to do with whether he's still going to come out and play in the NFL. He suggested he would go back to Clemson. That has nothing to do with who's going to pick him at the top of the draft specifically.
Of course, but he's in his mind, he's saying the right thing as the quarterback of Clemson right now, knowing that he's not graduating yet. Why wouldn't he say that and keep everybody happy and not even leave any breadcrumbs towards the NFL right now? Of course he would say that. But anybody who thinks he's serious and would go back to Clemson, come on, let's have a dose of reality. We all know what this is.
Well, of course. Of course we know he's going to come out no matter what, whether he's drafted by the Jets or not. He can manipulate his way out of that. We've seen players do it before, rarely, but it happens. Eli's one of them. John Elway was one of them. So it can happen. But are you saying that if the Jets were the number one pick in the draft, he would come back to Clemson?
No. No, I think he would absolutely go play for the Jets. I think the notion that he's either A, going back to Clemson to begin with, or B, would go back to Clemson. This is basically the overarching point. People think the main reason he'd go back to Clemson is because the Jets would have the number one pick, and that's his way of avoiding the Jets. That is absolutely the theme people are trying to run with right now, and I find that completely ridiculous.
Well, he can use, though, the possibility of going back to college as a way for the Jets to trade the pick.
Sure, he could, but now he's not going to hire an agent in the meantime before that happens. So he's going to go agentless up until close to the draft to try to be in a staring
contest. That's a different
discussion. But that's how it works.
But that's way down the road. To me, this is what Trevor Lawrence was doing. Trevor Lawrence sees a dumpster fire in the Jets. He's getting connected to the Jets. There's a lot of steam about him and the Jets. And he doesn't want to address that. And he certainly doesn't want to already set himself up for going into a disaster when it might not be a disaster.
100%.
When April rolls around, the Jets will probably not have Adam Gase. They might not have Joe Douglas. They might not even have the number one pick. You have no idea. And I think he just doesn't want to address specifically whoever would be the number one pick.
I completely agree.
Okay, but I also think that he can hold the leverage of, maybe I'd go back to Clemson as a way that if it was really bad, if it was staring him in the face like, oh, my God, this Jets thing is a disaster, he could hold that trump card to say, yeah, you know what, I could always go back to Clemson as a way to manipulate his way out of whatever it is, a Jets bad situation or another bad situation.
So I agree with you to that extent. He could only do it for so long, your point on not going down the road. My point is, listening to Lawrence's comments, I don't think that that's what he's doing. I think all he's trying to do there is just keep the focus that he's a Clemson Tiger and is showing how much he wants to be a Clemson Tiger. They're undefeated. Let me go for a national championship and not even create the firestorm of, you know, NFL draft maneuverability, because that's not what he should be focused on right now.
Well, I think you're right. I think that's the priority for Trevor Lawrence, is to not go too far down the road with the NFL because he's in the middle of a college football season. So I think you're right about that. But I do think that Trevor Lawrence is savvy enough to know I can always pull this card out of my pocket if I needed it and I really hated the situation that I was going to go into. Because, I mean, he is granted this kind of great opportunity. Like, Joe Burrow couldn't go back to school last year, but Trevor Lawrence actually can. He's the number one pick in the draft. And like Peyton Manning in 1997, he was going to be the number one pick in the draft, and the Jets were going to be the number one pick that year too. And whether it was because Peyton didn't want to play for the Jets or whatever, he came back in 98 to the Tennessee Volunteers. Trevor Lawrence has this very rare, unique situation to be the number one pick of the draft and still have a year of college eligibility.
He does, but I do think, you know, things are a little different. When you absolutely know you're the number one overall pick, injuries are even more thought of, social media driven. Everything goes into this thought process. Trevor Lawrence has known he's the number one pick for 3 years. He's going to now risk getting a bad knee injury or something like that to come back to avoid the Jets, who, by the way, if they don't take Trevor Lawrence number one overall, or probably picking number one overall to take him again next year anyway. I don't buy that.
Well, we don't know that the Jets would have the number one pick in the draft.
They're going to be awful. They're going to be awful next year if they don't get Trevor Lawrence.
We can't say in April 2022 the Jets are the number one pick yet.
You're right. Would they certainly not be one of the front runners in the mix?
Well, I mean, look at how crazy things change. I mean, the Texans wanted to be in the Super Bowl this year, as did the Vikings and the Cowboys, and they might all pick in the top five.
Right. But here's the other thing. When you're the top prospect coming out of top quarterback, show me the great team you're going to. We had this conversation with Burrow and we had Carson Palmer on Radio Row with the Bengals.
It almost never happens.
Right. I mean, who's he going to? The Giants, the worst team in football last 4 years? The Jaguars? The freaking Jaguars? I mean, anybody who's worthy enough for the Jets to trade out of that pick or anything that's up there that's going to be looking for a quarterback or anything like that, all you're going to when you're a top quarterback is dysfunction. It's your job to navigate out of the dysfunction and change that organization around. And Trevor Lawrence, the competitor, knows that. He's going to want to be a part of that. And his star power, he's going to avoid the biggest city of the world, New York City, because the Jets have made some bad coaching hires the last couple of years. There's no freaking chance that happens.
Would you walk into the Jets if you were Trevor Lawrence?
Yes, I would. Absolutely, because I know Adam Gase isn't going to be the head coach. And my options, what else are my options going to be?
They're going to force a trade. You can force the Jets to trade that pick.
The competent organizations already have the quarterbacks. There's so much dysfunction in the NFL. The Jets are just the magnitude of that because they're the flavor of the week this year.
What happens if you force a trade to the Vikings? That's a pretty good situation, wouldn't you say?
Is it? I mean, they stink. The Vikings never go to Super Bowls either.
But the Vikings are in a way better situation than the Jets are.
But Trevor Lawrence makes the Jets a great situation. They got a new head coach in there, and he's Trevor Lawrence. Like, he is the situation.
But wouldn't you say that Adam Thielen and Dalvin Cook is way different than what the Jets bring to the table for you?
Well, the Jets are going to now have a ton of cap space, the top amount of cap space in the league. They draft a quarterback like that, we don't have to pay him. You're telling me that situation, Trevor Lawrence doesn't create an attractive spot for maybe a free agent wide receiver to want to go or something like that?
I think that saying that the Jets are equal to any other quarterback situation is definitely off. I mean, how about getting a trade to the Niners next year if Garoppolo's going to? How about getting a trade to the Bears? I mean, there's plenty of much better franchises than the Jets if you wanted to force a trade to.
But you're rattling off playoff teams. The Jets aren't going to take the number one overall pick and trade it for multiple ones where they're going to be picking in the 20s and then later. The reason the Eli Manning trade worked is because the next pick was 1 and 4th overall. You're only going to make that trade with somebody who you're still going to be at the top end of the draft with. And they're all dysfunctional.
I mean, if you you think Trevor Lawrence is going to say every situation is created equally in the NFL? I don't think that's true at all. We always say situations are totally different.
But I think a lot of your situations are based on your head coach, your coaching staff, and everything that goes with it. This is going to be a clean new slate for the Jets. If you're telling me Adam Gase is definitely coming back, then maybe Trevor Lawrence has a point.
What about the Dallas Cowboys who could be drafting in the top?
You want to
five
talk about dysfunction?
Seven. But I mean, Trevor Lawrence going to Dallas and having Ezekiel Elliott and three really good wide receivers is a way different situation than going to the New York Jets.
Okay, right. Yes, maybe their offense is built better, but there's already, a coach that everybody says stinks, a coaching staff that can make adjustments, an owner that can't stop doing radio hits every week. They are dysfunction. They are dysfunction. Now, quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, okay, I understand. I guess that's a possibility.
You don't think being the quarterback of the Cowboys is a better situation than the quarterback of the Jets?
It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not dysfunctional. It's still a major situation you're going into. If he's going to avoid the Jets' dysfunction and the pressure of New York and everything that goes with it, well, what the heck's going to happen with the Cowboys?
But I think
you want to go running high in Jacksonville, be my guest.
It's also that it's threadbare as a roster, is that there's no talent on the Jets.
Right. They've clearly stripped things down there in a rebuild. I just mentioned, the most cap space in the NFL, clearly going to be picking at the top of the rounds of the drafts. They have a bunch of draft picks. They can't figure this out. Like, getting Trevor Lawrence changes that. It makes guys want to come there. Trevor Lawrence, it's not about like, okay, this is a great organization, great franchise. I need to go be a part of that. No. You are the franchise. We've waited for you for 3 years, the NFL has. You are the guy. That's the guy you build around that changes a franchise. Trevor Lawrence doing anything else tells me he doesn't have the guts to be that guy.
Well, he hasn't said he doesn't want to be part of that yet, so
exactly.
We can't question his guts.
Well, that's my point. I don't think he will say that because I think he will embrace it. I really don't think Trevor Lawrence is that kind of guy. But I think saying all the right things while you're at Clemson and chasing a national championship doesn't all of a sudden equal, oh my goodness, he doesn't want to be a Jet. And that's where a lot of people took it and ran with it yesterday.
Yes, I think that that's a leap to say that automatically yesterday was about not wanting to be a Jet. I agree. He does have that ace in the hole, though. If he does want to say, you know what, the situation, whatever it is, Jets or otherwise, is not the situation I want to go to, he can come back to Clemson. When we come back here on the show, we've got Cam Newton audio where I just feel like this guy is mentally broken right now. You'll hear this coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
Mraz to me is some sort of mythical character, especially on your Instagram. He's always this amazing character study.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
He is a mythical creature, especially on social media. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. We appreciate you being with us on a fine Wednesday morning. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. tomorrow, the Halloween Spooktacular episode here on the DA Show. Make sure you are locked in. The great Gidget of Gadgets, Kitty Lindahl, is going to join us, and she's going to be in costume as well. So that should be a lot of fun. Watch us at watchda.com or on Twitch using the CBS Sports Radio channel there. I want to play for you Cam Newton from Sunday's post-game press conference. Note that now these post-game press conferences are a player at the facility with the backdrop behind it, but on Zoom, so that the reporters are not in person with them. They're in a different room in the facility from the press box or maybe at home as well. So this is just Cam Newton said in his own room, all alone, wearing a very Cam Newton-esque getup with a big, amazing hat and a bow on the back of the hat and his big old sunglasses. I mean, the whole thing, the works. I think there's a big brooch on his shoulder, and it's just, it's sad Cam Newton. And he's asked specifically about one of the crushing interceptions that he threw. Here was Cam.
That's sad when you have to think about it. I just lost him. I lost him, and I seen Jacoby. I just eyed Jacoby too much. I should have just threw it away, got down. You know, the decision-making is inexcusable. And I think that's the most frustrating thing, you know, being that, you know, once you pride yourself on certain things that, you know, facing and you're doing or doing things that you're doing, you know, it even makes matters worse. So, you know, the point of emphasis all year has been protecting the football. And you know you have to protect the football. And when you do not protect the football, that's when you kind of, you know, question a lot of things. But, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're just going to come back to the drawing board, start tomorrow. And, you know, I have full faith in the coaching staff and, you know, and prepared. So, you know, it's just about player production.
At the beginning of that question, that answer, he has to put his hand over his face and think about what interception that he threw and to kind of dictate what had happened there to the reporter. And he says, it's so sad you have to think about it, because he's thinking about all of the interceptions that he threw. He couldn't even remember specifically which one until he kind of racked his brain. That was one of the more upbeat quotes that he had in this press conference. I saw a guy who had looked like he was letting down everybody, and he didn't know why his superpowers had left him. It was like he had just been zapped. And the more that I heard him speak, the more I just felt, wow, Cam, who's always been Superman, puff out the chest, bring it on, I'm here, is, I think, fighting himself mentally. I think he's fighting himself, and it wouldn't surprise me if Cam knows he gets to New England and he knows the coaches are going to be all over him. There is no room for error because they're used to winning and winning a certain way. And he's making the errors. And maybe Cam doesn't have physically his previous gifts, making him have to adjust his gameplay on the fly and maybe do things he's not comfortable in doing. And then how can you miss it? Tom Brady is playing at a crazy high level, and the Bucs are adding Antonio Brown. They've got Gronk. They've got Godwin. They've got Mike Evans. They've added Leonard Fournette. And here is Cam Newton throwing to N'Keal Harry and a tight end nobody's ever heard of. And you can't, to me, convince me that this is not building on Cam's shoulders. I mean, he's now lost three straight games for a team that's been in 9 Super Bowls over the last 20 years. He's lost 3 straight games. This is the first time this has happened under Belichick, I think, since, what, 02? They're looking up in the division by multiple games to multiple teams? You can't tell me that this is not weighing on Cam Newton's shoulders, because he is so un-Cam right now. Here's another clip from Cam Newton, and as he tries to describe his now lack of passion or lack of happiness that he's getting from football, you can just tell. I mean, the man's all over the place.
It's not rewarding when you're just going out there with this aura about yourself that's not you. You know, I love playing this football game. I have fun playing this football game, but the performances here, you know, hasn't been somewhat delightful for me to have fun in doing. So, you know, I just got to be better. And, you know, a lot of things starts and stops at that position, and, you know, I understand that. And I have put this team in a rut, you know, with the performances here. And yet, you know, just start over with Monday and see where it goes.
I love the quote, it hasn't been somewhat delightful for me. And that can describe a lot of things in life, don't you think? You're like, yeah, 2020 just really hasn't been somewhat delightful for me. It's less than delightful. I just think that is so un-Cam Newton. He is sad. The man is sad, and he might be sad because of the pressure of his coach. He might be sad because of the expectations of the organization. He might be sad because he feels like he's letting people down. He might be sad because he feels like this is the end of the road for what he used to be. He might be sad because he sees Tom Brady doing it at 43 and he can't do it at 31. Whatever the reason is, he is a sad Cam Newton. And we're not used to seeing that. And I don't know how it's going to get better because the Patriots aren't very good. The roster's not very good. So, I mean, this could be a 7-9 team. Could be a 6-10 team. Could be an 8-8 team, maybe. I doubt. But the fact is, I think that we're going to get a sad Cam Newton for most of the rest of the season. Mraz, does that sound anything like we know Cam Newton to be?
He's completely defeated. The jovial celebrations. And it goes back to, not to harp on whatever the heck Jeff Garcia said, seeing him sad, dressed up in the outfits, it's just not the same person, right? Like, when he was happy and Superman flexing and coming in with the Mr. Peanut hat and everything like that, we laughed with him. Now it's just, the whole thing breaks your heart when you watch him now. He's completely defeated as a player, as a human being. What happened to the MVP we once had? And we thought, and as Bogus alluded to, those first two games that we were on our way back to having that, and it's just, it feels like a matter of weeks, it turned, and it's like the most depressing thing in the NFL right now is watching Cam Newton.
He's sad, and that's not a good Cam quality, because he's been sulky before, no doubt.
Right.
When he's lost in Charlotte with the Panthers, he's been sulky and moody. But this is now, what?
I don't think I picked up on the headline before the show. I'm thinking about swing or a miss nonstop. Zig Newton's pretty good.
Zig Newton?
It's pretty good. Here I am trying to have a sad take, and you're making me laugh. Zig Newton's good. That's good.
But I think that he used to be sulky, he used to be pouty, but he wasn't defeated, as you said. He still believed in the power of Cam Newton, and he just believed, well, just put me out there again on Sunday. I'll prove all you guys. And now he doesn't have that. He doesn't have the confidence of, I'll forget the criticism, forget my bad game, put me back out there on Sunday. I'll prove it. Now you hear there is a real worry that he's never going to get his superpower back.
Yeah.
Andrew Bogus has our headlines this morning. Mr. Bogues,
good morning. Wait. Yes. Have you thought about no Cam do?
Oh, that's good. I'm going to take note of that for next time we talk about Cam here for the headlines.
Sorry, folks.
Guess I'm off side B now as well. Nothing new this morning. Nothing new this morning on Dodgers third baseman Justin Turner testing positive for COVID-19 during Game 6 of the World Series last night. Turner was removed from the game after the 7th, but talked his way back onto the field for the end of his team celebration. He apparently also refused requests by MLB security to leave the field. Turner touched the trophy, hugged teammates, took his mask off for a team photo. His Dodgers were celebrating mostly because of the 6th inning last night, the bottom of the 6th to be exact. Rays starter Blake Snell was on cruise control. No runs, 1 hit, 9 Ks, threw 5 and a third, and then Austin Barnes singled, and then Kevin Cash pulled Snell, and then Nick Anderson did this.
Seager on 0-1, takes a pitch in the dirt, gets past Zanino. Here comes Barnes with the tying run.
Charlie Steiner, Dodgers radio, Mookie Betts then scored the go-ahead run on Corey Seager's bouncer to first. Betts smacked a solo homer in the 8th, and Julio Urias put the Rays away.
No balls, 2 strikes, 2 out. Urias to Adames. Call strike 3! The Dodgers win! Finally, the wait is over. The Dodgers are the champions of 2020. in a year like no other, where joy has been so hard to come by. Tonight, tears of joy, let them flow.
That again, of course, is Charlie Steiner. The 3-1 final through tears gives the Dodgers their seventh title, their first since 88. Seager's the MVP, just as he was in the NLCS. Snell and the Rays, meanwhile, can only wonder what if.
Yeah, I mean, it just sucks. I mean, I'm not going to question him. I mean, he's a hell of a manager, so I'm not going to question him.
The franchise now 0-2 in the World Series. The Cincinnati Bengals have reportedly told unhappy defensive end Carlos Dunlap to stay home while they decide his future. Maybe a trade before Tuesday's deadline. The Cowboys giving a similar message to D-tackle Dontari Poe and cornerback Daryl Worley. They'll apparently be released if they can't be traded. Dez Bryant officially joins the Ravens practice squad. Baltimore receivers last in the NFL in receptions and yards. And the Panthers have designated Christian McCaffrey to return from IR. He's missed 5 games with a high ankle sprain. It remains a long shot that he plays tomorrow against Atlanta. So a listener sent me some more info on Danny Vandenboom, who may be Wisconsin's starting QB because of reported positive COVID tests for Graham Mertz and Chase Wolfe. Vandenboom won 2 Wisconsin state titles in high school, throwing for 56 touchdowns over those 2 seasons. I believe he's gotten into a handful of games in the past for the Badgers, but if he has to start, and would likely for 3 weeks, we'll see what Mr. Vandenboom's got for the rest of the Big Ten. The Masters, which begins in 2 weeks, has to make some adjustments because of less daylight this time of year in Georgia. For rounds 1 and 2, threesomes will start from the first and the 10th holes instead of just number 1. There is also no par 3 tourney this year. And MLS last night, Seattle and NYCFC clinched playoff spots. The Sounders also retaking number 1 in the West with their 2-0 win at Vancouver. DA, back to you.
Excellent. Thank you, AB. I would get your last licks in an hour. Daily poll question, which is, do you truly believe there's 23 flavors that make up Dr. Pepper's secret recipe?
Hard hitting.
No World Series take this morning on the poll question.
We are at the point in our careers here on the DA show, the evolution of the show, where we're just seeing what we can get away with and when finally we have touched the third rail. So today it's, how many of the 23 flavors of Dr. Pepper do you believe in?
Juniper.
We're basically a walking heat check. Is that what you're saying? We're the hot shooter taking a 35-foot 3 just to see if that's going to go in too.
That's right. Okay. And almost none of them are going in, but we're just going to keep chucking.
Yeah. And 3 of the 4 of us will inevitably have a Dr. Pepper today as a result, because that's what always happens.
It's so true. We love Dr. Pepper on the show. So you can vote in that web poll at CBS Sports Radio. Also, an Ask the Pros question of the day coming up, and your epic fail. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
So today we were discussing our love of Dr. Pepper here on the DA show. I specifically love Dr. Pepper. And according to whether it's Urban Legend or whatever, there's 23 flavors of Dr. Pepper. They would be amaretto, almond, blackberry, black licorice, caramel, carrot, clove, cherry, cola, ginger, juniper, lemon, molasses, nutmeg, orange, prune, plum, pepper, root beer, rum, raspberry, tomato, and vanilla. Our poll question today, do you think Dr. Pepper's recipe really has 23 different flavors? 53% of you, a very close race, said, of course, while 47% said, no way. Dr. Pepper, created in the 1880s by pharmacist Charles Alderton of Waco, Texas. Today in Waco, this is the most amazing stat dug up by our advanced analytics team, better than the Tampa Bay Rays last night, that citizens of Waco consume 270 bottles of Dr. Pepper per person every year. That essentially, you're drinking at least one Dr. Pepper 4 out of 5 days.
Wow.
That's an incredible amount of Dr. Pepper per year. 270 bottles? There's only 365 days in a year. According to the Dr. Pepper website, the drink does not contain any prune juice. Oof. Our Ask the Pros question of the day brought to you by O'Reilly. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Ed tweets in, DA, does Rob Manfred deserve some credit for the World Series happening after the beginning of the season when MLB looked doomed? They plowed through, got it done. Congrats to the Dodgers and the rest of the league. Yes, in some ways, yes. I don't know how much credit. I mean, the fact is, baseball is never really ready to take a full year off. You want to remain, even if you lose money, you want to remain in the public eye because taking a full year off puts you out of sight, out of mind, in a rapidly high-paced attention span that we are in and out. And if you took a full year off, I mean, imagine if baseball wasn't played this year, then we would not have seen baseball since spring training in March up until this upcoming March, maybe. And if you're talking about regular season games or games that mattered, you would not have seen a baseball game from October 2019 when the Nationals won the World Series to perhaps opening day, April 2021. You can't go that long. So, yes, they found a way to get it done. Yes, they pushed through the outbreaks of the Cardinals, the Marlins. Yes, they figured out the bubble at the end of the playoffs. And yes, they got the season in. I think, though, that they had to get it in. They had to figure out something because the owners knew we can't go a full calendar year and not have a baseball game played. Let's get your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And this had to do with what we expect the demise, personally, of me to be one day and how it will be reported on the show. This is the epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
That's basically going to be what they're going to do to me in 2030. They're going to be like, with bacon, Mothership connected. Ha, 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 ha. Great career.
With bacon.
Great career, DA. With bacon. You want to say with that bacon. One more time? Really hysterical, you one-note clown.
I can.
It's 100 years ago you're talking about.
You're the snarky update anchor. He got the great beam me up to the sky last night, Damon Amendolara.
Oh, no. No.
Hashtag zap zap. We got it. We get it.
The mothership is officially landed. Oh.
You got that. Disconnected forever.
And DA has finally disconnected for good. R.I.P. Zap Zap. Hopefully he's at the pearly gates with bacon. Back after this.
With bacon.
It's the Connor Green Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, Connor Green's going to be the one laughing at my obit. Yeah, great show, buddy.
But a sad note, Rusty Staub has died at the age of 23.
32 years on network radio. What'd you give us? A couple of sound effects and a with bacon. That's it. You happy?
With bacon.
And the pride of West Babylon.
Blobs Bar. Cheese balls. Oh, yeah, you had a few hot dog eating contests on the air. Real record-breaking stuff there, DA. You really changed the medium.
You're using low journalism. That's not nice.
Good morning, DA. How are you?
Oh, man, what if salsa actually kills you?
Yeah. Poopy-doopy-doopy. Find out years later the after effects of all my internal organs burning up from death by salsa is what did me in. Oh, the irony as Connor Green takes over the radio airwaves.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
It's Green with envy. Coming to mornings here on CBS Sports Radio. This was all because we were talking once again about Chris Berman. Lonnie tweets, oh my God, you guys were killing me. I almost passed out. I was laughing so hard at the Vanderboom. Whoop! My coworker came running over. She thought I was choking. No, it's just the mothership doing it the right way. Mr. Fahrenheit says, so this is the future Chris Berman boomer call. Let's send it out to Camp Randall Stadium, also known as the house that Ron the Great Dane built to see Danny Vander. Boom goes the dynamite. Thunder past the Frank Purdue Boilermakers 31-3 on Saturday. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Badges. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bellotti, Wheels of Steel, and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, and Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Tomorrow, the annual spooktacular Halloween episode, The Mothership Disconnects.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.